So why do I do this? Why do we do this? Collecting songs, I guess. Because we like to sing. They're songs that we really like. And I collect songs, I don't collect songs that I don't like. But I'm not going to sing them. And some songs I like, but they're not for me. They're not in my vocal range, or they're not a style that I can do. Other people can do it. And, it's a personal thing, and it's sort of random. I haven't decided to, cover the whole spectrum, which is not possible anyway. And what I want to start out with, I probably said already, so I won't say it again, about the fact that most Americans don't sing, which we go back to the 19th century or earlier, or even early 20th century. That was, in many ways, the only type of entertainment. So you made your own entertainment. And you shared songs, so you had a song, gave it to somebody, or somebody new came into the community or the group and had a new song, and say, oh, that's great, and that becomes part of your repertoire. But now we listen to recordings, MP3 files, and whether our iPods, and now it's streaming all the way, it's the latest.
No idea what that means.
Well, it means that...
Well, I mean, the last thing. I know what you mean.
Turn on your computer, and the computer...
Thank you.
Pandora.
Oh, that kind of thing.
Pandora decides from what you tell it what kind of music you like. And I never got into Pandora, but a friend of mine does, and he says, we get great music because he uses it a lot, and so Pandora knows what his tastes are. But that was a much different way than people used to select music. And in this whole music industrial complex is telling us what we ought to be listening to, and that we shouldn't be singing because we're not professionals and don't even try, and just sit back and pay your money and listen. It's all about the noise. That's nothing new. So what kind of songs? I mean, the songs that people can sing, and somebody asked me what kind of music I play or sing, and that's difficult to answer. My wife and I were out walking in our neighborhood, and we met an elderly woman, and we just started chatting. She said, well, what do you do? And we said, we're retired. And my wife said, well, we're into music. And she said, oh, well, what kind of music do you play? And I said, folk music. And she paused for a minute or so, and she said, well, is that the kind of stuff that they play on Hee Haw, which is this, hillbilly music program on TV way back? And I said, no, it's not really that. And it was impossible to explain to this woman just what kind of, but folk music, it's impossible. I don't even want to get into a discussion of what is folk music. I would even broaden it and say folk music is music that the folk songs are songs that the people sing. It could be old, it could be new, but songs that people sing that are singable, that have lyrics that you can actually, so they're simple, not terribly wordy, and that are about things that are of interest, like history and people and geography, and not about me. And then also tunes. Most of the songs that you hear now in the popular media, they have no tunes. Mm-hmm. They just go up and down, maybe one or two notes. There's nothing to them. you wouldn't walk out of the room after listening to this and whistle this tune or hum it, because there's nothing there to catch you, so it has to have interesting tunes, I think. The old Broadway show tunes are tremendous. Sing those and it really gets to you. So, oh, here's another thing. Well, I just don't want to dwell on Rise Up Singing very long, because I can get out of hand. But it's a great resource book, the Blue Book, that Song Circles use, but it's not to be brought to the Song Circles, in my opinion. When I was in college in the late 50s, there were a few of us folk singers. It wasn't a big thing back then, and we would get together in somebody's dorm room or out on the lawn someplace. And there was this book about So Thick and about So by So called Songfest. Any of you remember that?
Dick and Beth
Best. Best and Beth. Best and Best. Yeah. Dick and Beth Best. And this was published by the, I don't know, Collegiate Outings Association or something like this, which was based out in East Coast New England and all the Ivy League colleges there. But it had a great collection of songs, songs that college kids like to sing, funny songs, serious songs, just a really great collection. And it had not only the lyrics, but it had the melody. But it didn't have any attributions. It didn't tell you where the song came from, who composed it, or anything like that. But it was a great songbook. And I still have a couple of copies. They're pretty much falling apart. And I have more, but I gave them away. And now if you go to the internet, you can buy them for $40 or $50 on that.
So just write it down to go to the internet, but maybe not.
Yeah, so anyway. And then new songs. I like to collect new songs that aren't going to get noticed, and so I collect them because I think that if we're going across a really nice new song, it should be noticed and maybe maintained. So these old songs are dying out. We have to keep them alive and discover old songs that have been forgotten, and then also new songs that aren't going to be remembered unless we sing them. So how did I get into this thing? When I was in junior high, I guess, in the early 50s, my dad and I used to like to listen to the Grand Ole Opry on Saturday evening on the radio. And this was after listening to the Metropolitan Opera with my mother in the morning on the radio. So I had both extremes. I still like both types of music. So the Grand Ole Opry, that's what I started doing, singing. And I like this country music. It's different from what it is today. And so I was looking through some old notebooks, I guess, recently. And I saw a couple pieces of paper that I had just neatly typed out on a typewriter, the lyrics to a couple songs that I must have found back in the early 50s, which I must have liked because I copied them down. And so one of them, I'm sure I heard on the Grand Ole Opry, was Remember Me. That's in this.
Can we take one of those too?
And there's handouts too there.
Yeah.
Well, this one's empty. This has just been here for a long time. There's a book that we can pull. You got me this time.
So, I only found out recently the information behind this, But Scotty Weissman and his wife and singing partner, Lula Bell, Scotty and Lula Bell, were big hits on the Grand Ole Opry, probably in the, well, in the 30s and the 40s and maybe up to the 50s. And this was a big hit recording of theirs, I think in 1939 or thereabouts. And just a nice song. He was inspired to write this song. He said, growing up in his parents' home, there was this high shelf in the kitchen, and top of the shelf was a cup, teacup. And his parents never allowed him to touch this. This was up on this high shelf, and it must have had some sentimental significance. He didn't know why. And around the rim of the cup was the words, "Remember Me." So he took this and wrote this song that sort of speculated this might be the story. So, it's not, my voice isn't going to break. So let's just warm up our voices. And what I like to do is just yawn and then just go really high. Expand your abdomen, and that flattens off your diaphragm, and opens up your, creates a vacuum in your lungs, and lets the air come in, and then you bring this back, and the air goes out. Everything from here on up is totally relaxed, no tension whatsoever. All the tension is down here. So if you relax up here, and let this be your bellows, and so, let's just do some scales, and rather than do la 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 la, which is pretty boring, oh Zimbabwe, oh Zimbabwe, oh Zimbabwe,
oh Zimbabwe, oh Zimbabwe, oh Zimbabwe, oh Zimbabwe,
Remember me when the candlelight's gleaming.
you still remember me.
Upper eye of your face makes me take my place with where I dear.
A sweeter smile, let the world go free. But in the end, wherever your friends will break your heart, dear, if they do, sweetheart, remember me. So sweet when all alone I'm dreaming, just to know you still remember me, just to know you still remember me.
Good start.
The right note?
I like that kind of music. And when I got to college, folk singing wasn't a big thing. There were, I don't know, maybe a dozen of us who sang folk songs. And there was one guy who had a beard. That was an unusual thing in the late 50s. And he was a neat guy, and he had a guitar, and we'd get together and get out the old yellow songbook. And another song, which I had very carefully typed out in, when I was a junior high age, was I can't remember the titles, and I have to look through this whole thing. It's here. Colorado Trail. I probably got this out of the Burlives songbook that we all had back in the 50s. Well, this is a song that was collected by Carl Sandburg, and I actually found this song up in Duluth, Minnesota. There was an old cowboy who happened to be up in Duluth wrangling horses, and this nasty old horse threw him, and he just was all broken up, bones broken, and abrasions and everything. So he went into the hospital in Duluth to get mended, and he was there for several weeks. When he was at the point that he could sit up, he got his guitar out and started playing, and everybody else in the hospital was entertained, and they thought that was neat. And then he left, and then I don't know how much later, Carl Sandburg came by and talked to this surgeon, and the surgeon told him that this, about this cowboy, and this was one of the songs that the surgeon had remembered, and gave this to Carl Sandburg. But I think it was only one verse, at least that was only one verse that Carl Sandburg listed in his song bag collection of songs, and I just dropped this song. And it has this last two lines, sort of the chorus at the end of each verse.
Eyes like the morning star, cheeks like a rose. Laura was a pretty girl, God Almighty knows. We followed the rains, where the rains went. All along the Colorado Trail. Ride on a lonely night, ride all the day. If that herd a moving on its way. We followed girl, joyful all the day.
We all sang the 13 Bloody Verses. It was a song about the opera Thais, but it was encapsulated in this 6-minute song, the whole thing. And I always used the book because I could never imagine learning 13 verses. And then after college, I didn't sing it much. I mean, didn't sing it for 40 years, 30 years. And then about 20 years ago or 15 years ago, my wife and I were out on a road trip through Death Valley, which was an ideal locale for this song. And it just came into my mind. And so for about 10 or 15 minutes, we had worked out all the words. It was just a matter, we knew all the lines, it was just a matter of putting them in the right order. It was amazing. So I never sat down to memorize a song, but it was there. One time in Alexandria, in wicked Alexandria, where nights were wild with revelry and life was but a game. There lived, so the report is, an adventurous and courtesan, the pride of Alexandria, and Thais was her name. Nearby, in peace and piety, avoiding all society, there dwelt a band of holy men who felt a refuge there. And in the desert solitude, they spurned all earthly folly to devote their lives to holy works, to fasting and to prayer. Now one monk whom I solely mention of this group of holy men was known as Athanael. He was famous near and far. At fasting bouts or prayer with him, no other could compare with him. At grand and lofty praying, he could do the course in par. One night, while sleeping heavily, while wrestling with the devil, he had gone to bed exhausted, while the sun was standing still. He had a vision Friday, and though he was annoyed, he analyzed it in the well-known style of doctors Jung and Brill. He dreamed of Alexandria, wicked Alexandria. A crowd of men were cheering in a manner rather rude. And Thais, who was dancing there, and Athanael dancing there, observed to do the shimmy in what artists call the nude. Said he, this dream fantastical disturbs my thoughts monastical. Some unsuppressed desire I fear has found my monkish cell. I blush up to the hat of me to view this girl's anatomy. I'll go to Alexandria and save her soul from hell. So pausing not to wonder where he put his winter underwear, he quickly patches evening clothes, a toothbrush, and a vest. To guard against exposure, he threw in some wool and hosiery, and bidding all the boys goodbye, he started on his quest. The monk, though warned and fortified, was deeply shocked and mortified to find on his arrival wild revelry and strain. Solo some lay in a stupor sent by ghouls of more than 2%. The others were behaving in a most immoral way. Says he to Thais, pardon me, although this job is hard on me. I have to put you wise to what I came down here to tell. What's all this house and getting you cut out this spy I retinue? Let's hit the trail together, kid, and save your soul from hell. Although this bold admonishment caused Thais some astonishment, she coyly answered, say you said a heaping mouthful of woe. This bird's a frost, I'm telling you, the kind of hooch they're selling you ain't like the stuff we used to get, so let's pack up and go. So forth from Alexandria, from wicked Alexandria, across the desert sands they go beneath the blazing sun, while Thais, parched and sweltering, finds refuge in the sheltering seclusion of a convent in the habit of a nun. And now the monk is terrified to find his fears are verified. His holy vows of chastity have cracked beneath the strain. Like one who has a jag on, he cries out in grief and agony, I'd sell my soul to see her do the shimmy once again. Alas, his pleadings clamorous, though passionate and amorous, have come too late. The courtesan has danced her final dance. Says he, now that's a joke on me, for that they're deigned to croak on me. I should not have passed her up the time I had the chance. I never knew where the song came from. I mean, this book didn't have attributions. And so it was only, I don't know, 10, 15 years ago, I got curious. And I got on the internet. And I found out that this was written, the lyrics were written by a guy by the name of Newman Levy. Now, Newman Levy was born in the 1880s. Sometime, I lived till the 1960s, I guess. And Newman Levy, his father was a lawyer, and Newman was made to go to law school, and he actually became the city attorney of New York City at one time. But his real passion was in lyric writing. Poetry, comic poetry. So, in fact, his cousin was Richard Rogers, and he would have loved to be followed the path of his cousin, but he was made to go into law. We had this dual life, and he wrote several books, and one of them was called Opera Guide, but it's spelled G-U-Y-E-D. And the idea was, this was to tell the stories of these operas in words that the average guy could understand. And wonderful. Now, I've set some of these other poems of his to music, and it's on my website. I'll talk about that in a minute. And then he wrote another book, Theater Guide, G-U-I-E-D. And he wrote several other books of poetry. He used to publish this in the Saturday Evening Post or the Saturday, the New Yorker magazine and all these popular magazines at that time. But nobody knows about Newman Levy anymore. And it's a wealth of just great lyric poetry and needs to be discovered. So, anyway, what else do I want to say about that? So that was getting into what I do. But I just pick up songs as not any particular plan. I just, I like a song, pick it up. So I've got a website, and it's on this handout here. This is just the first page of my song page. And you can, this is very about, about 250 songs altogether. They're just songs that I like to sing. But I put together the songs that, for group singing in this songbook, so that's the difference. It's because some songs are not really adapted to group singing. So, at the right of every title, I have a PDF, so I have a PDF file, which is a musical score of most of these. And then sometimes I have a MIDI file, which is just an electronic melody file. And some of them I have my own recording as an MP3 file. And so you can look that up if you want. So how do you discover songs? Well, I can't tell you exactly how to do it, but you just keep your ears and eyes open. And, you know, somebody comes to the jam or the song circle and has a neat song. Okay, that's one way. That's the way people used to do it. But now, one of the resources on the internet, which is Mudcat. How many of you are familiar with Mudcat? Yeah, Mudcat is this, I don't know, thousands of, a database of thousands of folk songs, not only folk songs, but blues songs and other songs. So it's a great resource, but it also has a forum, an internet forum, so people get on there and they say, well, here's a song that isn't in the database, so that's, often you find a song that way, or somebody says, I know this song and I can't remember it completely, so anybody can help me. And sometimes that's easy, sometimes it takes some digging to find a song. And then people discuss the songs, and there's some really knowledgeable people that get on the internet, that get on the forum and tell you a lot about the background of the songs. But there's a lot of stupid stuff on this forum too, so you gotta sift through it. For example, the Cliffs of Moher are in here. This isn't the fiddle tune, but...
Oh, so a different melody than the
Cliffs of Moher. Oh, yeah. Anyway, there's a singing duo from Minnesota that I've gotten to know. They come out to Seattle several times. In fact, we hosted them in our house. Curtis and Loretta. Curtis and Loretta are just a neat couple that do traditional songs. Loretta plays harp, and Curtis plays all sorts of stringed instruments. And I heard them sing this song several years ago, Cliffs of Moher. And I said, that's a nice song, I really like that. And I got the words and I said, well, can you tell me anything about the song? Well, it was composed by Dermot Kelly. Well, who's Dermot Kelly? Well, they didn't know anything. They got the song on a cassette from somebody who wanted them to sing it at their wedding or something. And the person that they got it from, she got it from a singer, a harp player, who was at the Cliffs of Moher in Ireland. And that's all she knew. So I got on the Mudcat and I said, can anybody tell me about this song, Cliffs of Moher, written by Dermot Kelly, or anything about Dermot Kelly? No, there was no response. I'd given up. After a year, this thread came back and somebody said, oh yes, I know Dermot. He lives near the Cliffs of Moher, and he wrote this song for Tina Naruni, who is a harp player who busks quite often on the Cliffs of Moher. And my first visit to the Cliffs of Moher was in 2001, and I just got off the plane at had a bus ride. I was pretty boozy, but I do remember this woman playing harp, and that certainly was was Tina. Anyway, so I got all this information. That was really pretty neat. And Dermot is a retired bank manager, but he's a prolific songwriter. He's written all sorts of songs, and this is just one of his songs. And it has a chorus. Well, let's just start from the beginning. Okay, let's start with the chorus.
See it and smell it.
If any of you have seen Princess Bride, That the cliffs that they climb up, those are the cliffs of Moher.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. Also, Harry Potter in the sixth movie.
The cliffs of Moher. Yes, of Moher.
Yeah.
And it was usually a gale force wind blowing. The last time I was there, I could barely make headway. I'd take one step forward and the wind would blow me back two steps.
Good thing it's blowing that way instead of the other way.
Well, he was coming off the Eliza. I think it was the tail end of a hurricane that came around. But it's always windy up there. And the other thing is there's no guardrail. It just land goes off flat and then it just drops off. And people are on their stomachs, they're hanging their heads over. But this limestone is really fragile. And I wouldn't dare do that. It's pretty scary, but it's awesome. Cliffs, this huge, high cliffs.
Yeah. And do people parachute off it or whatever they do, you know?
I don't think so. No,
maybe
watch.
Where would you live?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, people do that.
And you have this feeling that if you could see far enough, and the earth wasn't curved, you could see all the way to Nova Scotia or wherever the same latitude. So, let's just talk about a few other things. So how do I discover songs? I listen, concerts, radio, Boots, Songs, St. Circles, books, magazines, Sing Out. I used to subscribe to Sing Out for a long time, and then recently they've gotten, it's just all singer-songwriter, which is okay, but it wasn't of much interest to me, so I lapsed. But there are, they still have some traditional songs that are printed in Sing Out. And
it's a magazine?
Yeah.
Could I ask you a question about the derail here? My question is dances, songs with dances in them.
Pardon?
Well, have you encountered songs that are like dances? Like Ring Around the Rosie, you know, it's a dance as well as a song.
There are, I don't do them, but I mean, that's...
Because I'll ask later. There's a song I've been curious about.
Yeah. And the internet. I mean, that's the biggest source. So if you have a... YouTube is great. You can waste all sorts of time perusing YouTube, but YouTube is actually best if you know a song and want to hear somebody perform it, and it happens to be on YouTube. There's all sorts of internet sites, and so here's a little piece I wrote on the second page. Bring Back America's Singing, on group singing, community singing. The next page is traditional music resources. And there's, I can't go through all of these or any of these, but there's books, there's web resources, and there's many more than what I listed. And CD collections, there's a recent CD collection called Dear Jean, which various artists celebrated the life of Jean Ritchie. She's still alive, I think. She's in her 90s, I guess. And she plays the Appalachian dulcimer. And, in Kentucky, she grew up, and so she has this wealth of songs that come out of Kentucky and Appalachia. And it's a 3-CD volume, I think it is. So there's a lot of neat songs in there. So you can just, peruse the internet.
Can you access the L. Lomax collection on Smithsonian? Can you get to those songs?
I don't. Well, the Smithsonian has a site.
Folkways.
Folkways recordings. Carl Sandburg's song bag is complete on the internet, so you can find that. Utah Phillips songbook which Duncan, his son, has republished, Starlight on the Rails. I would say buy the new edition that Duncan has published, and there's a website for Duncan Utah Phillips. But you can get the whole thing, somebody's had, it's on the internet too.
Is the new one have more songs than the one published in 73?
No, it's the same.
Same one.
So, but the new one, well, I think the old one also, but the new one has stories about the songs that Duncan tells, or that Utah tells. So it has a lot more information. It Utah talks about each song and how he got inspired and so forth. Utah Phillips is fantastic, and I just got this song, but I just love it. So that, and then the last page, I hesitated to do this, but these are just very personal. These are just, I just jotted down off the top of my head some of my favorite artists. And Norma Waterson, Martin Carthy, and Eliza Carthy are great English traditional singers. Eliza is their daughter, and Eliza has this fantastic background of traditional English songs, but she was and still is, I think she's probably in her, probably close to 40 now, but she was a real wild kid. Every time I saw a picture of her, she had different color hair, she had different body piercings and all of this type of stuff. But she's taken these, she has a respect for the tradition, and she's taken the tradition and put it into contemporary, really upbeat, appeals to the young people arrangements. And you might not necessarily like some of her stuff, it's really way out, but she does have a real respect for the tradition, and I like her.
What was the name?
Eliza Carthy, and Norma Waterson, Martin Carthy. Jeff Warner is probably, in my opinion, a world-class folklorist. His parents were Ann and Frank Warner, who were collectors, sort of like the Lomaxes were, but a little bit later in the 30s and 40s. And when Jeff was a kid, his parents would take him out into Appalachia and meet all these old people that knew these old songs. And so Jeff has continued this, and Jeff has been out to Seattle several times. First time, in recent times he came out, I hosted him for a house concert. He's just a great guy, and he's a great performer, and he knows all this folklore and so forth. And so forth and so on. So if you, this is just my own list, if you're interested in looking up some of these people, maybe they don't all appeal to you, but that's that. And we have time for one more song?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Does anybody?
Precious Memories.
Pardon?
Precious Memories.
Oh, yes.
Can you tell me about it?
Well, I don't know much about it, but I mean, it's a spiritual.
It's been in my head for months.
Of course. That's a spiritual country song, and I do it a little bit, just a little quirk in the last verse. I added another beat, so you will get it, but if you're used to doing it in a conventional way, it's a little different. Verse, and then the second verse is really the chorus, and so the second thing is just the chorus between each verse. So we'll start with the first verse. precious memories on St. Andrew Jones. Come, how sent from me. Precious memories of St. Angels send from somewhere to my soul. How they linger ever near me, and the sacred sins of the Lord. More fundamentalist church, far out, but fundamentalist. And I like to go with him Wednesday nights to his hymn sing. Nothing to do with religion. It was just these great songs, and they were in four-part harmony, and it was just wonderful. And so, I like that. So, any questions or anything?
Yeah, I've got a question. Yeah. It's a really techie, nerdy question. But I've tried, in learning songs, I've like recorded them from the string band and the various groups that I play in. So I got these MP3s, and I tried to bring them into iTunes so I could just play them as part of my iTunes library.
Yeah.
And they just don't come in, and I'm wondering if like there's another app or something that'll just play your MP3 recordings that you make.
Well, you should be able to just import it. You just go to your directory in your computer where you have your MP3 files and tell them, and it just automatically.
So it'll suck them into iTunes?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, good. It'll be there and everything. iTunes is really neat. I like, love iTunes. Amazon has something which is more clunky, I guess. Although I don't really. I'm not a. Amazon is an evil empire. My grandson thinks Apple is an evil empire, but. That's another thing. But the other thing about memorizing songs, I'm a big fan of memorizing songs, though it gets harder the older you get. But you should really try to do this.
And it's good for your memory.
And this is the only way that a song becomes your song.
Yeah.
And then you realize all the nuances and what it's about. Even, you know, a year or two later, you're discovering little things. But when it's your song, when you know it, when it's you memorize it, then that's the best thing. And you can come to Calm Song Circle without all these papers and all this stuff. Just, you know. Okay,
thank you.
Thank you.